heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
The nation.
And now, Malcolm.
You know, I'm hearing all different types of schools of thought here with what's happening in our nation. We'll talk about the silent majority today, people. But before I get there into that silent majority, one of the things we need to focus on and remember, a lot of people look to the federal government and they look for the federal government to solve the problems of the day, whatever they may be. And then the other argument on the other side of that is that we want a smaller footprint of big government coming out of Washington, and we want more local government. Now, the government closest to you is really what's going to impact your life more so. What we're dealing with now is people are looking up to Washington, wondering, well, what's going on here? Are you going to solve the problems here, whether they be in Portland, Seattle, Charleston, South Carolina, Virginia, Georgia, just about anywhere in the nation? We're seeing these struggles, and we're seeing, many people would argue, the nation being ripped apart. One of the things we've seen over the years, people, is the mayors, the governors, the commissioners, mostly the nation has elected a lot of Democrats in those positions. And that's where we find ourselves. If you look at the decline of our urban cities and America's cities, a lot of them are run by Democrats, socialist Democrats. Those are policies that go to the far left. Now, the challenge we're having is the Democrat Party has been ripped open. I mean, totally ripped open. And so when we think of the Democrat Party, we look back and we think, you know, of a more peaceful Democrat Party back in JFK days where, you know, there were liberal social policies, but they weren't reckless. And they were more toward the center of the aisle. You could sit down and at least have a conversation with these people and talk out some of the problems. They weren't really radical, so to speak, or you didn't think that way. I say that in one context, but then you look back historically at our nation. We've been through some rough patches before where we've had civil unrest and times when people thought the nation was coming unglued, like we would never see tomorrow. So I think what we're faced with now is the balance of, what's our utopia going to look like here, yeah? I mean, we have this nation that's being pulled apart. Is this just business as usual? I mean, should we just buckle up and stay our ground and hope that things will take care of themselves and time will pass and America will come to its senses again, once again? I mean, we're going to pass into our 244th year of our great nation here in just a bit here. I mean, that's what we're looking at, people. And so now this nation has become a mature nation with a lot of divided factions that are pulling it apart. Most of those factions I think we can live with, or we can try to come to some conclusions. It's the extremists and the radicals that are taking advantage of the situation, and that's what we've got here now when you're seeing the torment and you're seeing people pull at each other and you're seeing the riots and the unrest and the things where they're taking any particular spark which becomes an opportunity. Such as Floyd. And who's Floyd again? I mean, that sounds like a hurricane that hit, Hurricane Floyd, right? It came, it went, it's gone. But yet that was the spark or the opportunity for these radicals to get involved and to tear the nation apart and try to get it to bleed somewhat. Now, President Trump referred just a few days ago in a tweet, he said, "The silent majority is stronger than ever before. Hashtag MAGA, make America great again," with some really beautiful pictures of the crowd there in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And interesting, and there was a lot of challenges with putting that rally on. We'll dive into that a little bit after here. But I think what I want to say first, the contest of make America great again, and what we need to get through to we the people, our citizens here in our nation, is this, people. there is absolutely no way we're going to be able to make America great again, or keep America great, whatever you want to call it, or transition to greatness, right? I mean, any of these slogans, if we don't have great American cities and towns in our communities, it's not going to be possible. And that's something I think that's lost on a lot of people, that they've lost sight of how important that is. And they're really focused on just the federal government, the big bad government, and not really focused on the local races. And what I'm pointing out now to you, I think, is really the premise of where the Republican Party has been for a long time. They haven't really fought the race on the local level. And therefore, they've lost so many of these races in our mayors and our governors and in our counties across our great nation. So while a lot of the nation is running around with their hair on fire, fighting on social media with the MAGA movement, the argument I would give back to you is that it's a pipe dream. You're not going to get there unless you begin to get back to your cities, towns, communities, counties, and begin to take those over, all the way down to your local homeless association, whatever it might be, people. You know, the old saying about politics, that you either get involved in politics or it gets involved in you, is a very real statement. And there are a lot of people who run around in our nation who don't get involved at all. They keep to themselves and think, it's not my fight, it's not my problem. We'll just get through it. And the problem is those people don't listen to talk radio like this. They're not listening to intelligent talk radio. That's just not where they are. They'll give you a few minutes on the dial on some television station on one of those far left liberal stations, and then that's where their mind is. They really think the sky is falling, and they think that, you know, there's a heap of trouble, and you know, they believe that the president is doing bad things because that's what the media puts out there. So when the president says the silent majority is stronger than ever before, that is going to be the test of time right now, isn't it? I mean, we're going to be testing that out because here's the message I have for you today, people. Here's the big message. You can keep to yourself. You can play like it doesn't matter. You can just ignore all of this as we pass into our 245th year now as a nation. And pretend, keep your head under the pillow or in the sand, whatever it is, and turn it all off. Think it doesn't impact you or what have you. And then we can wake up on November 4th, the morning of, and see what just took place the night before. Are we happy with those results? Is this where we want to take the nation? It's a serious moment in time for our nation. And I think what I'm thinking of here is, when it comes to a lot of these policies that are being put forth from the Socialist Democrat Party, is that the kind of nation that you're looking for? Because what they've done is they've tried to make this election about Donald Trump. And I don't think the election really is about Donald Trump, people. The election is about we the people. Donald Trump is just our ambassador. He represents we the people. The election is not about Donald J. Trump, really. It's about the rest of us. It's about we the people. He is simply a representative of the people. It is this nation that sent him to Washington to handle the big problems. And that really is part of the problem here. You have enormous kickback from the deep state and the establishment that doesn't want a Donald J. Trump in office. They don't like 45 for a lot of reasons. He's not part of that secret club, not part of the code. You know, just like when you were a kid, he didn't pay those dues. Therefore, he is not part of that club. And they have pushed back hard. And we've seen that time and time again. We've seen that, you know, from the very beginning of this president. He has never been accepted into the club. He's never been part of this group. Because typically what our politicians do is they kick the can down the road. We've seen this all of our lives. You've all seen it out there, every darn one of you. Democrat, Republican, Independent, every one of you have seen this. That's what politicians do. They don't really solve the big problems. They just push it down the road to the next whatever. Someone else can deal with it. I mean, just look at immigration as a perfect example. You know, the whole DACA movement with the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court also kicks it down the road, never really addressing the problem. And we're seeing that in all walks of life with a lot of our problems. So here's the thing. As great as America is, as exceptional as America is as a nation, we have this internal struggle that has taken place that is tearing this nation apart. And a lot of it has got to come back to what I'm talking about right now, people, is we're not paying attention to what really matters. Yeah, a lot of people are upset about what's going on in these West Coast cities and Portland and Seattle and so many others, really. But that's just really the tipping point of what's really taking place here. And a lot of people think it's a social argument. You know, all these radical groups, the Antifas, the Black Lives Matter, these radical organizations, CARE, there's a whole litany of these people. And then there's just people who want to get out and create terror. There's some of those people as well. It's like an intersection where you've got all these radical groups who've come together, and there's a mixture of these things. And then you've got total, you know, mayhem in the street, and people will be killed. And you have to ask yourself, is this the kind of life we want? Businesses are being closed down. This is just while COVID is still going on and the pandemic is happening. And so you've got this, you know, we're all sort of messed up with this, with the lockdown. Tempers are high. And now you've got an election coming real fast here. Inside of the next 5+ months, we'll be electing a president. I mean, this is the shortest presidential race in the history of our nation right now. The shortest race we've ever been through. And I told you this right along, the lights were going to come on quick and things were going to get rough. And I talked about that on the weekend, actually. They're going to get really rough. If you think it's storming now, prepare yourself, patriots. I've got news for you. There's going to be a lot more surprises between now and November 3rd. This I can guarantee you. And the Bolton book will be in the rearview mirror quickly. That's not even going to be one of them. It's a non-event. It's a non-starter. It's not going to do anything because people can read between those tea leaves real quick. But that's not the kind of problem I'm talking about here now. But there are going to be some more surprises because what you see now as a testament to what's really happening, if you look back over the past 3.5 years with this president, have you ever seen anything like this in your lifetime? Of course not. Everything has been thrown at this president, every single thing. And it really, and let me rephrase that. Everything has been thrown against we the people. Everything has been thrown against good people, you out there. This is really where the insult is. This is really where the rubber meets the road. Again, it's important we inform people that President Trump is just a representative of us. Let's get that out there clear. This race isn't really against Trump. It's against we the people. He represents us. He works for us. That's what 45 does. So let's talk to the radical groups and the socialists and the far left and tell them this isn't against the president. This is against us, we the people. That's where we have to take this fight, my friends. And I've got to get this through to you out there to understand what the stakes are. It's an important point right now, but equally important, in addition to a general election, has got to be your local races, your mayors, your governors, and certainly your federal elections as well, your senators, your congressional representation in your states is critically important because you've got divided government more than anything else. And if you want to continue to have a dysfunctional parents, which is what you have in Washington, then you keep going down this road, America, and you're going to see nothing. You're not going to solve any problems. You got to decide what you're going to do when you grow up, right? You get through that pimply teenage stage here. What are you going to be when you grow up, America? And well, we're right there right now. I mean, that's where we're at right this moment. And so what do we want to be when we grow up? Who do we give the keys to? But, you know, it's like driving down the boulevard. You got two people driving the car. Well, guess what happens, people? You're all over the road. I mean, you're liable to crash the car. You're going to make a freaking wreck out of everything. You're not going to get to where your destination is. But yet that's what we're doing here in this nation. Why do we do this? It's not a balance of government. It's not a balance of solving our problems by giving power to the left and the right. Because they don't want to work together. America, can you hear me? They don't want to work together. So you've now got to make a decision at this moment, at this fork in the road, is what are we going to do now at 244 years in? You know, who do we put behind the wheel? You've seen what local government is doing right now. You've seen the kind of representation you're getting in your cities and towns with the socialist left. If that's what you want running the Fed, good luck. God bless you. So back to the silent majority in the president's tweet. How big is that silent majority? Now, there's no question these people don't talk to pollsters. Let's get that clear. But yet the media will continue to use anything they can to sabotage we the people. And then, of course, Trump is our representative. You see? That's what it is. They're trying to sabotage. This, the Fourth Estate doesn't represent we the people. I, you know, it's hard to say who the hell they represent. Some far distant land and, you know, some radical agenda. It's hard to fathom, really, what's happened with the media in this nation. It's actually the biggest story of the century is the loss of journalism and representation because we can't get the word out there. The only way I can get the word out there is for you to invite these people in here at America Out Loud and the Voice of a Nation. Other than that, we don't have a shot in hell. I'm not sure where to go with these people. If we don't reach the people, how do we inform the people, you see? And there's the problem. They're only hearing the drip, 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 and the drumbeat from the media and the left here that we continue to talk about, right? Just look at your cities and towns. I mean, any reasonable person right now would look at all this and say, well, this is a slam dunk. And the problem is the conservatives think this is a slam dunk. The Republicans think, well, we're going to win all 50 states. I keep hearing a lot of people say that on the right. Well, we're going to win all 50 states. The president's going to sweep everything. He's going to clean house. And these are the same people who will probably sit home with their bag of potato chips on the 3rd of November. So that silent majority is what I'm worried about, is how big is that majority? Because I wish the hell they would not be silent any longer, like even now, that they would raise their voices and push back at the media and the radicalization of our nation and say, we're not going to have it. We're not going that road. We're at the fork of the road, and that's the road we're not going on. We're going to stay this way here. And that's the moment we have here, people in our nation here, as we look at, you know, this election coming up quick, both on the federal level, the local level, and really the level that's going to impact you in your lives out here. We've got to wake America up. We've got to wake the entire nation up and get involved in this and understand that the stakes are incredibly high, or their life of peace and tranquility will be in the rearview mirror real quick. Just look at what's happening in your cities, and it's everywhere, people. Don't think it's so far from you, it'll never happen in your little town, wherever you are. The radicals are storming everywhere, and they're well aware what's going on in America, and they're taking advantage of the situation right now as we are, you know, disembobulated. We're unglued, and they know it, and they're in there to seize the moment. That's what they're looking for right there, people. Imagine waking up, you know, on the 4th of November and realize that your America is no longer the America you thought you were living in. Imagine that. Imagine if everything you're seeing right now becomes the norm. And this is a whole new day now, a new nation. Well, don't think too long, people. And don't think it's a stretch either. I recommend you take a look at the real facts on the ground and what's taking place here. More Voice of a Nation in just a moment.
The silent majority has spoken. We say, let the silent voices be heard. You can be the voice of change. Contact our producer at liberty@americaoutloud.com. liberty@americaoutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health. Sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Listen to Malcolm, the Voice of a Nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
An interesting op-ed I told you about on the weekend here was everyone in D.C. believes they know better than Trump, and they are wrong. You might recall talking about that. We discussed a little bit with Dennis Santiago, and it's an interesting read for a lot of reasons. One of the things I talked to you in the opening sequence of the program about kicking the can down the road, that really has become the traditional way of doing business in America, sadly. It's really the one of the weaknesses and the underpinnings of having these frequent elections and no term limits, I think, is what I see as kind of the cancer here. You know, we continue to talk about, you know, do we need term limits? And I would argue that we do. You can't really not have them. We see what the danger is right now. But part of the kicking the can down the road is that they're only kicking it to the next election. Whereas if they didn't have to worry about the next election, if they knew that they only had, you know, for instance, if they had like a year and a half left and that's it, and they're done in that role or that position as a senator, as a congresswoman, that's it. Well, chances of them doing the right thing, no matter what, because it's not going to, the consequences of the election are not going to play to that. I think the chances of that probably rise. So that's another consideration here, people, that we continue to talk about, but how do we get there? Well, Dennis, in your piece, you talk about, let me read this here, kicking the can down the road by other presidents who were unable to overturn the considered opinion of the D.C. establishment apparatus has been the norm since, well, quite frankly, it has given the staffers the mistaken impression that they are in charge. They are not. We've been talking a lot about the bureaucracy in Washington, and this has been a lot of the troubles this administration has had, is all of these little time bombs littered throughout the administration, throughout Washington, D.C., throughout the bureaucracy of Washington. And what's happening is a lot of these people, they think they're running the show because that's what Washington has been, because the people who are really running it are just continue to kick the can down the road, never solving the big problems of the day. And our country really isn't better off for it. Let's pick up right there with you, and because I talk about, you know, term limits and what that could do. Are you a believer in term limits? Do you think they would help?
I'm very much a believer in term limits. I'm also a believer in the routine and systematic undoing of bureaucracies in Washington. I don't believe any federal agency should survive more than 50 years without scrutiny and more than 75 years without reorganization. Basically, we need to, the problem with that they're looking at here when you have no term limits and you have perpetual bureaucracies is that they do at a certain point stabilize into whatever it was they were originally created for. And then it's very, very hard to change from that. And sooner or later, the country's direction, and just because we live on a planet where other things are happening, we become disconnected from the real needs of the country, the real needs of the planet, and the institutional inertia that holds us back is really what makes the U.S. unable to adapt. Now, and the only way to fix that is to really tear things down and start again. And, you know, and that's one of the things that the American system was always designed to do. It was never designed to be permanent. It was always designed to be reborn on a regular basis.
Is that
that's why we have elections every 2 years.
Is that a moment we're at right now?
Yes, I believe we are. And interestingly enough, I mean, you know, so I wrote that article the op-ed about Bolton and him, mm-hmm. you know, he's really, you know, one of those, he's an example of the stuck bureaucracy that is part of this country. And, you know, I like to tell people there's no difference really between Bolton and Brennan in that they're both part of the Washington establishment. And, you know, and other people that are part of the Washington establishment at this point include people like Pelosi and Schumer. When you really think about what's been happening in the country for the last 4 years, and really since 2015, mm-hmm. is you have outsiders beginning to come into government. So the first outsider that really upset Washington was Donald Trump. In 2015, when he got the nomination, it just sent shockwaves through mm-hmm. the entire sure Washington did. Beltway. Yeah. And which is kind of, you know, and we're living through that. He's been resisted every step of the way. And interestingly enough, if you really look at it, the next outsider that has come into the Washington landscape that is also equally upset DC is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, right? Mm-hmm. It basically, what's really interesting about those two people is they both got there because of the internet. The internet, not the mainstream media, is driving change in Washington, D.C., and it's driving change against the will of the establishment, which knows how to use the media, but has no clue how the internet works. Hmm. And you're seeing, I think, at this point, for this election cycle, I really believe that what you're going to see is a fight on the internet for control of the country between forces that really the mainstream media has no idea how it works, how to control it. And it works so much faster than them at any point in time. And that's where we are. So, you know, so now we have a country where democracy is practiced in virtual space and real space is very slow to adapt to it. You know, and look, if you look at the rhetoric and you look at the way that people talk, it just even your description of what leads up to the decisions that America is making right now, right. You know, we still talk about it in terms of conventional thought, but that's not what's driving it anymore.
Interesting. All right. So let's say we had term limits. Let's take a look at that. What would we look like now? Had we had term limits, let's say, in the last 40 years, how do you think we would be looking right now as compared to what's happened?
Had term limits in the last 40 years, I think the country would be somewhat different. One of the things the last 40 years of no term limits has done is it's also fixed a lot of the cultural values from the 1950s. Into the landscape of the U.S. A lot of the political battles that go on between conservative and liberal in this country are changes that really began in the late 1950s and came to a head in the middle 1960s, and they're still around with us. And it's because, you know, we're kind of stuck there. If we'd had term limits and continuous change, I actually believe that the liberal agenda would be probably have moved further along, because the liberal agenda is in fact something that is a phenomenon of the urbanization of America. And, you know, you need bigger governments in cities compared to governments that are outside cities. The cost of caring for people in urban centers in terms of just the infrastructure that you have to have kind of forces you in that direction. And we have a lot of our population right now has been concentrating into the cities mm-hmm. over the last 40 years. And so I think the cities would be much more powerful in terms of their effect on the country than they are now. And, you know, and they're pretty powerful as it sits.
Mm-hmm. Let's, you know, dive down a little bit more. And here's what it is here. If we have, you take a look at Mitch McConnell, for instance, and we talk about, well, let's just take him. Let's take Chuck Schumer, let's take Nancy Pelosi, and even McCarthy. If we take those people right now, okay, and let's say they weren't there in Washington, and in their last, because we had term limits, and in their last days, a couple things I think about. How would they have handled the way they've governed differently if they knew that they were expiring next year, that was it? She could no longer be Speaker, she could no longer be in the House, Pelosi specifically, or McConnell on the other side of the aisle in the Senate. So would they have governed differently in that last year or 2 years of office, do you think?
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, if you had term limits, one of the things that you have to do, if you have a long-term party agenda, which is, you know, the philosophical part of what being a Republican or Democrat really is, you would have to pay a lot more attention to the passing of the baton from one set of leadership to the next. And the thing about that process of having to pass it on is you have to build real consensus and real, you know, a real center soul for what it is that you are passing on, as opposed to what happened over the last 40 years. And this has happened to both the Republican and the Democratic Party, is that they didn't have to pass anything on. So it just became more and more draconian in how they disciplined their troops. The Democrats went down the path for a very long time of disciplining their ranks as if, you know, everybody was in a union, you know, so it was, and because it used to be the party of the unions a long time ago. And they used union tactics to establish discipline in the party. And you were expected to do exactly what the leadership said. The Republican Party had its own version of that, which was not based on unionism, but was based, you know, for the most part on the old boy system, and which the Democrats had too. It was the cigar smoking, bourbon drinking till 3 o'clock in the morning world of politics. All that is, you know, and some of it's still there, some of it's gone away, but that would have all had to change with the passing of baton every, probably about every 8 years to 12 years at the most, because that's, you know, the overlaps of that. And then it's not that these people would go away, but they would have to find ways for them to continue to have influence when they're not in the seat that they want to be in. And that you can't be a senator. If you had the term limit out as a senator or as a congressman, you really would have to find something else to do in between. And if you notice, a lot of these guys that were in states where the term limits do exist for public officials, when they get out, they take a very big chance that they'll get the next slot up. And in a lot of cases, they fail. And then they disappear.
If we had had the term limits and these people would have governed differently, you take like immigration as a simple example here. We haven't been able to solve the immigration problem at all. Now, President Barack Obama, number 44, created this DACA for the Dreamers program illegally. So it was an illegal executive order. I mean, he was governed by executive order, but the president often said that, Obama, that he had a pen and he would use it. And he did. And he governed a lot by executive order. Now, President Trump came out, he put a message out that said, I don't want a political answer. You know, that's not what I'm looking for. I want to solve the problem. And it went up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court, you see Chief Justice John Roberts, again, letting the conservative movement down, sided with the left wing of the court, struck it down, and because they didn't want to handle the problems, the big problem of the day. And now here we are back to square one again.
You know, the establishment's best case for the immigration issue is that it never gets solved, right?
Because who does that benefit? Who does that benefit that don't get solved?
It benefits the people in the establishment that are trying to consolidate power for themselves. They don't actually care what happens to us out in the provinces, right?
Yeah.
And so essentially, but if term limits were there, they would have to care what's happening in the provinces because things would be turning over. Now, it doesn't mean that the solution to the immigration question would be one that would make you or I happy with, you know, where we feel about our American value system in the way that we see it. But what would happen is it would be more reflective, and there would be substantive change. And very probably, if you really looked at it objectively, there would probably be varying approaches being tried in different parts of the country to tailor the immigration question to the needs of the specific region. I mean, we have agricultural regions in the United States where you want people coming in on a seasonal basis. There are other areas where it just doesn't make any sense to be bringing people in. It certainly doesn't make any sense to be planting people in various parts of the country where they would be better served, or the interests of the nation would be better served by bringing people in so they go through a proper assimilation cycle in this country and become Americans as opposed to foreigners living in America. Those are two different ways to look at it. And there's just no way that the system that we have now, which is based on consolidating power and using this issue and the people that are affected by this issue as pawns of power, that's what we have. And that's kind of wrong. It's wrong for us. It's wrong for these people. You know, it's wrong for the interests of the country. And it really only serves this Washington elite establishment that has an interest in perpetuating their position in the world with respect to the rest of us. It's a castle keep solution.
That is so well said. I mean, you hear Dennis there, people, that is so well said, the consolidation of power. And you see the problem of why I think the time has come for term limits. This, everything that Dennis is just saying right now, that is not at all what was intended for our nation. That is not at all what the framers put forth here. It was to go into government to serve the people and then leave. Now, listen, we have term limits on the presidency for exactly those reasons, because we figured that out in this century, that it was not a good thing to have a president hang around for too long. Because at one point that didn't exist, people, and your president, that we had presidents that had three terms, and a president at that point could hang around for three, four, five terms, and then you become sort of, you know, what a lot of countries have, you become a dictator in charge. That wasn't the vision of America, you see. But see, what we're falling short is we're allowing the senators and the congressional representation to do exactly that. They're becoming more demons to the program here, to the process. And that consolidation of power is exactly what Dennis talks about there. This is one of the pivotal points, I think, of what's really screwing us up, quite frankly. And I think if we could, you know, like everything, flush it out, wash the system out, get new people in, then, you know, potentially someone like a Trump would be less of a threat to the system. Think about that too, people. You see, when you ask, well, why is he such a threat to the system? Well, we've drawn already out for you why he is, because he's changing those rules and the rules of the road, and he makes people uncomfortable. You see, because he's impacting their fiefdoms and what they've been in power for, which is, you know, they exist to exist. It just continues to propagate, you know, bullshit. I mean, that's what politicians do so well. And I think we're onto something here. I think I want to tell you today that we need to really seriously look and consider our term limits. We'll pick that up again after this quick pause. Be back with Dennis just a moment. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Well, as we celebrate our four-year anniversary, thank you for making it all possible. We are a grassroots movement of patriots, blogs, podcast, video, and 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio. I like this quote here from Senator Rick Scott. He was the previous governor, as you know, in Florida. And he says, I've been a member of the United States Senate for 4 months, as he said back in 2019 here. And it is as dysfunctional as you think it is. Government needs to be completely reinvented. If you were going to create a federal government system today, it sure wouldn't be what we have now, he said. And he gets into it. It's an interesting, you know, the comments and quotes that Scott made. He says that career politicians' gravy train needs to come to an end. It's clear that now more than ever, it will be an uphill climb, but I'm committed to fighting for the people of Florida, blah, blah, blah. But to wrap it up, he says, I knew Washington was dysfunctional, gummed up and not moving, but it's worse than I ever thought. And Dennis, that is interesting with Rick Scott to say that. And I'll tell you why here with Scott. Now, the thing about Scott I want to remind people of, Scott really isn't a polished politician. He ran his life as a businessman, as an executive in the healthcare industry. In fact, his part lay into politics was in Florida, and it was highly contested when he ran to win the governorship there. But he has a CEO mind again. He's another one that operates more in the private sector as a CEO. And that's why he makes a comment like that back in 2019. Yeah, this was back in May 2019, he said that, Dennis. And, you know, but that's, you know, he says, I knew it was bad, but my God, it is so dysfunctional, he says, so gummed up and so not moving forward. See, that's what a businessman would see that comes to Washington with common sense to try to solve the problems, and then they see that you can't really do that. This kind of a system would drive somebody like Scott bananas, don't you think?
Oh, it has. It is driving people like Scott bananas. I mean, you know, and look at the difference. And the Senate isn't even as bad as it gets. Mm-hmm. It's what you really see it is, you know, look at any of those State of the Union speeches that when Trump does the delivery, and you notice just how dysfunctional Congress is when the people on the left side of the aisle won't stand up unless Nancy makes a wave that says do that or not do that. It's not just dysfunctional. Yeah. It is tied up with chains.
Yeah. Let's pause your thought right there, because you just really got me thinking here with what I just said about Scott, and then with what you said about the State of the Union speech. On any given State of the Union speech, it doesn't really matter. And then, Dennis, we say, well, divided government. And let me preface this out here, because here's the thing. I have said repeatedly to our listeners and to America that we're supposed to be divided as a nation. And when we say dysfunctional, because we're supposed to be that way, it just is, we're never going to all agree to one way, nor should we. That's not what we represent here. And that's not what the framers seen as well. That's why we have three branches of government and the setup of the way that it is. But the fact that we're not flushing out the old to get new in, and because there are term limits, and because people are, as you say, they're seizing that power, and they're trying to consume as much of that power as they can. When you consider the State of the Union, see the divided government that it is, it's beyond the division. It's beyond the dysfunctional. It's become just about warfare right now. And so I wonder, by flushing that out or in, how much would that change? You know, how does it change the paradigm? And when you look at somebody, Trump, because Trump is one of the most hated and one of the most loved presidents we've ever seen. I mean, he is loved to the stars and he is hated to hell. You've never seen anyone quite this divided with Trump. He brings out the best of people and the worst of people, doesn't he?
Yes, he is. He does. He is. He's a very polar figure. And let me add to that. He's a charismatic polar figure, mm-hmm. in that you're going to react to him one way or the other. There's no middle ground when it comes to a personality like Donald Trump. And even more so because he's such an outsider to the system. And because of that, he's forcing people to have to engage in debate deep inside themselves. It was supposed to be a tumultuous place. They had rules about fist fights and caning during, you know, during the time Ben Franklin was and was totally into it, going like, you know, we can hit each other, but you can't hit each other with a cane because you might kill somebody, right? And remember, Jefferson liked dueling, and actually dueling was kind of a big deal in the early part of the American government, because they knew that the issues that they were trying to work with were very, very divided, and they needed outlets to allow that energy to go. Today, if anything,
you know, when you constrain the ability of the system to debate, what you do is you create psychological, basically you drive people nuts and you send people into depression, and then then it sends them into doing weird things. And that's kind of where we have the political system right now. It's not actually free to be America.
It's not free to be America?
Yeah, no, it's constrained. It's captive America. It's you know, only do what Nancy says, right?
Yeah.
And quite honestly, you know, that's why you got people like Cortez in there going, like, I'm not doing what Nancy says. I'm doing what I want. You know, that's actually, in a strange and macabre way, a little bit closer to the way Congress was supposed to work in the first place.
Because Nancy Pelosi has been there so long and she holds that much power and raising the dollars, and mostly it's because she's a great fundraiser within the Democrat caucus there. She can raise all kinds of dollars and promise the moon and the sun and not deliver on a damn thing as long as they can control the power and gum up the works so we don't get nothing done. What's happening right now is I played that Biden commercial over the weekend there. And I mean, if you listen to that commercial, they're pinning everything on number 45, which is really, again, we the people, everything from the COVID thing to the riots and the unrest now and the racist xenophobe president that they've labeled him that he is. And so it's a bit confusing to people to really look through the weeds here and understand how much of America is going to blame this on 45. How much of America is going to hold that against the president, Dennis? How much of America is going to understand what's happened here, the game that's being played? You see, we don't know the answer to that.
Well, I'll give you a perspective on this and what I really think this election is going to boil down to. America, the choice for America in the 2020 election is between Donald Trump and what he represents. And the alternative being going back to relying on the Washington establishment, you know, because that's really, you've got a fairly weak candidate on the Democratic side and who really will, you know, succumb to the will of the Beltway. So the choice for America is between Trump and the Beltway. America's made this choice before, right? And the last time it was also with a president who hired into his cabinet enemies, political enemies, in order to get to let them play out in front of him so that he could make decisions like a CEO and solve problems that seemed insurmountable for the country. The guy's name was Abraham Lincoln. Okay. He was also, like Donald Trump, a president that faced an America that was at a point of tumultuous change in terms of where we go next. And we're here. We're here because of the internet. And Lincoln was there because of industrialization. I mean, you know, and notice I never said race in any one of those. These were external factors or environmental factors having to do with the infrastructure of life in the United States that put these two men in this position. Lincoln, like Trump, would bring in people, you know, in the most recent case, people like Bolton, who, you know, clearly has probably the most opposite view of foreign policy from Donald Trump in terms of how to execute it, and would bring them into the process and let them play out. In some cases, they would play out so that they were helpful to the country. In others, you know, clearly these guys brought them in so that they could burn themselves out and create a situation where they go, if that's not the right answer, might as well make it so everybody can see that that's the wrong way to go. And that's a very brave thing for that type of personality and president to do, being polar, charismatic, and in order to take a country through this kind of difficult stage of life. And you know, and that's kind of the choice we have to make. Do we want that process to continue? And if you want that process to continue of America finding itself right now, then you vote for Donald Trump. If you want to go back to the consolidation of power and the control of this country by elites in the Washington Beltway that don't give a darn what happens to us out in the provinces, then go the other way. And it's really that simple.
Yeah, the era that Lincoln was here, he is a president that sizes up very interestingly to President Trump. He was the 16th president of our nation. And really, Lincoln had a lot of the big challenges. You know, a lot of people thought our nation, Dennis, was coming to an end back there with the Civil War. I mean, we really thought that was, they thought at the time that was the end of America, right? I mean, you...
You were there, right?
You were alive then, weren't you?
No. Come on.
Okay, back in the 1860s.
But I was a baby at the best.
Oh, you were a baby, but I knew you had to be here. You're old as dirt. I mean, come on. And Lincoln's big challenge at that point, Dennis, was to try to keep the nation together. His purpose was to try to preserve the Union. I mean, that's what he was all about. And that's kind of what Trump is doing now, isn't it? I mean, in a lot of ways, we're at the same pivotal point, aren't we?
He had to keep a nation together through a side of the nation that wanted to go with the Industrial Revolution and the side of the nation that wanted to go in a different direction. They wanted to go into a maritime situation. Today, you have Donald Trump trying to manage just as tumultuous a split in this country. It's really traditional America versus what's been happening in the cities of America, which doesn't look like the America that we knew in the 1950s, the 1960s, 70s, or even 80s. It's very, very different. And a lot of it has to do with the cost of running these cities. It's like hyper-industrialization at this point. And it doesn't look like the values of other parts of the country. One side of it is now controlled by a party, which also happens to be extremely invested in the establishment bureaucracy of Washington, D.C., and they want to keep that preserved. You know, then remember, they think this is good, that this is right, that this is the direction the country should go. And they're asking in the 2020 election for approval by the people of the United States to go back and follow that direction. And you got Trump on the other side going, you know, no, I want to keep the entire country together, including all of the people that aren't part of that elitist culture, because they're important to America too. I mean, yeah. Me, I'm of a mind to go with keep America broader and more inclusive. And that is not where the Democrats are going.
So if we compare right now to back to the 1860s, right at this very moment of time, the question is this just another moment in time for America, Dennis, or is this a pivotal moment for America? I mean, what's the difference between the two?
I'm going to be positive on this. I think this is just another moment in the teething pains of a still very young nation. We're only 244 years old, man.
Right.
You know, culturally, we haven't even hit teenage years yet, right? Because, you know, the real true long-term cultures of this planet are, you know, between 2,000 and 5,000 years old, right? But the thing is about us, we come to these situations where we think everything is on the line. When I step back about it, I'm like, yeah, we're being Americans. We're being exactly what we're supposed to be. We are doing exactly what the founding fathers knew we had to do in order to find and pursue a more perfect union. The bottom line is, you know, this is what it looks like. This is, and we get excited about it. And you know what? It's despite the fact that the people on each side are hyper excited, they're still being Americans, and that's the positive side of it to me. I think we'll get through this, and we won't lose our country because of it. I think in the end we will find something that will pull us back together, because we've done it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And you got to have faith that each of these episodes makes us better. Otherwise, you know, why are we here?
Yeah, it's very well said, I believe. I wonder what you think out there, people. Do you agree with Dennis's assessment? Because as he's talking, I'm thinking there are a lot of people on our platform, on our network here at America Out Loud, I could think of certain ones who would agree with him, what he says right there. And there would be just as many who would disagree, who would say, no, this is a pivotal moment in time. the argument of whether we are in the teenage years or more in the elder years is a question up for everyone to decide. A lot of historians believe and point out that most great empires crumble between that 200 and 300 years mark. In fact, I've pointed that out to you all many times. I mean, even Alexis de Tocqueville, one of the interesting big thinkers of our time here, just before our time, and he would often say that as well. And many other historians today point out that America's got to be real careful and should never be taken for granted. I think that's what gets me fired up more so. When I think of the terms of what Dennis is saying there, I feel, okay, I'm ready then. I'm ready to take this on and do battle. Let's do it, man. Let's do it. And then on the other hand, you get probably a little emotional when you see that they're messing with our great nation. And that's where emotions get really super high because you don't want to jeopardize America because there's only one. There's not another America coming anytime soon, people. This is it. This is it. The other challenge is, you know, we fight for good. We fight in the battle of good versus evil. And we're supposed to fight for good. Absolutely. I was talking to a very dear friend over the weekend. I hadn't talked to him in some time. And he reminded me, this very dear friend, the fact that he said, Malcolm, please go read Revelations again. He said he reminded me. And take a look at what's happening right now at this moment of time and size it up right there, he said. We are definitely being challenged and tested, he said. And we're coming through a very interesting phase. Now, we're not quite there yet, but we are on the early beginnings of some things that are happening here. And then it takes on more of a religious sense because he talked about the Antichrist coming and others like that. You know, in the history of time here, people have asked me if Barack Obama was the Antichrist or George Soros or one of these kinds of characters, you know. And I would always answer them and say, no, they're not the Antichrist specifically, but they are indeed related to them. They're in the family, you know, maybe a cousin or something, I don't know. That gives us some food for thought here as we move on. In other words, there's a big picture here that plays into all of this in the fight of good versus evil, which is what I believe this all comes down to and back to, quite frankly, is that fight, that core fight. In America, well, it's in the history of history, it ceases to exist at that point in time. And there is a point of time where America is no more in the history of mankind and humankind. And so the quandary or the question that Dennis brings up is, are we there at that moment or are we in the early days of America? Now, what does that mean to you and I? It means that we're supposed to still fight, people. We're supposed to fight for good always. That's our responsibility here as stewards of this great nation. That's what we're supposed to do. And so that's the rallying call I would say to you here. And it's kind of what I put up there right at the top of America Out Loud. Here we take on the challenges of our generation so that we can preserve future generations. I mean, there's no more noble cause than that right there. I mean, that should get you excited. I mean, it doesn't need to be any more than that, people. Thank you here to Dennis Santiago for joining us on The Voice of a Nation here. And catch our show live every day, 6 and 10, here on America Out Loud Talk Radio. It all goes to podcasts a couple few days later here. It's all back there, friends, at AmericaOutLoud.com. We need your help to continue to preserve our liberty and fight for the next generation here. It is your rallying call as well. It's time to get involved and get loud.